is the Freedom Fiends Variety Hour. Trigger warning. We are broadcasting from Pod Bay 2A, a mile above sea level, at Intergalactic Prairie Studios on the corner of Trash View and Nada Vista. We alter your locus coeruleus by warming your synapses with rejuvenative radio waves. Please put on your 3D glasses now. Can you feel it? Can you feel it, Phil? Is it working?
Oh, it's working, man.
Yeah, it's working. We warm your brain to a tasty and toasty 365 degrees Fahrenheit to keep a sin flood of statism out of your head. The Freedom Fiends is covered by a BIPCOT no government license. This allows use and reuse by anyone except governments and government agents. Learn more at BIPCOT.org. So, Phil, what's up, brother? Yeah. Man?
Yeah. Hey, man. Yeah. Good to be here.
Yep, it's good to be. What does a comedian say? Oh, it's good to be anywhere. Yeah.
Right.
So how do you know me, Phil? Phil Warman.
Well, man, it all started back at community college, right?
Jamestown Community College, JCC.
That's it, man.
Yeah.
English 101 in radio broadcasting class. Remember that?
Yeah,
I do. I remember specifically one incident where, I don't know, it was a Sunday. We happened to be hanging out at the student union because that's where the station was. And I don't know if you remember this guy, but I can't remember his name. But he did the gospel hour, and he had a goal. He had a goal, man. And he saw us there, and he said, "Can you take over for us?" So, yeah, we took over for him.
Is that how we got on radio?
Yeah. Well,
is
remember
that how it started?
Our professor said, "There's two bands you can't play: the Sex Pistols and Frank Zappa." Right. So we just got our FCC licenses. We had to break them in. And
That was when you had to have an FCC license to be on radio.
Yeah, like,
not just absolutely. To run a station, but to be someone speaking on the radio. You had to send $10 off to the FCC and get a card that was in your wallet. Like you,
yeah,
were,
we
were
a little yellow card. Yeah,
we were card carrying broadcasters. Yeah,
serious,
we were registered,
man,
with the government. And you know, I'll bet the government could revoke those cards, and then you wouldn't be able to talk on radio.
Yeah, I don't think
if
they
you
had
Frank Zappa.
Well, that's what we did, remember? So
yeah. Yeah.
It was during the gospel hour, and all these little old ladies were, you know, expecting, you know, Mahalia
gospel.
Jackson or something, and then we blast them with some Zappa, man. And wow. I remember there was a big fervor on campus after that, and we actually fed it because I wrote a letter to the editor as if I was a person who was offended.
Oh, really?
So, yeah, so that was kind of our start in radio, but I can remember just, like, playing entire albums of Pink Floyd and just, you know,
yeah,
let them go. And then in between, but that was the cool part was we would do spoken word stuff, man. We would
we'd
do our own stuff and
poetry.
And I remember, yeah, and I remember you bringing in your guitar and just like it was more almost like a hangout, you know. It was pretty cool.
Kind of like this now. Yeah, we recently reconnected. I mean, we're talking, this was the early 80s. What year was this?
80.
I graduated high school in
82.
When did you
yeah.
graduate high school?
81.
Well,
yeah.
Actually, how old are you, if I could ask?
54.
Okay, you're a couple years. I'm a 53. So here's the thing. I think we were in the same year in college, but here's what happened. I got kicked out of my boarding school in Pennsylvania, the Church Farm School, for calling the headmaster a fat, bald, overly Christian old fart in a letter I wrote to Mick Jagger telling him to buy the school and fire the headmaster. And so I, instead of going back to Westfield for my senior year, you know, I didn't know what to do. I got kicked out during the summer. Like, this letter got returned to Mick Jagger unopened, and the headmaster's secretary read it and handed it to the headmaster, and he said, "Who's Mick Jagger?" This guy who ran a school for boys said, "Who's Mick Jagger?" But use your cough dump there when you snort and clear your throat. Yeah, yeah. And this is a teaching hospital. Most radio shows try to hide their flaws. We point them out to make the audience more able to do what we do because we want to open source everything. So when I got kicked out of boarding school during the summer, like my parents got this letter. I didn't really get kicked out. I got asked not to come back, so it didn't go on my record. But I've made it part of my permanent record by bragging about it ever since. Mm-hmm. So I didn't know what to do, you know, so I called my old school that I hadn't been to in 4 years, Westfield Academy and Central School, and said, you know, so this happened, what should I do? And the guy said, well, I'll tell you what, you know, I'll have the guidance counselor come in on a Saturday in the summer to school, and you can go have a meeting with them and figure out what to do.
Wow.
And yeah, and it actually seems like it was a really nice thing to do, but actually what it was they were like, oh my God, we don't want Michael Dean back at this school. We're gonna send him somewhere else. So I went in there in the summer, and he said, Michael, do you know Natalie Merchant? And I'm like, yeah. And this is before the 10,000 Maniac. She was just the other weird kid at that school.
Right.
And she had... You know, she was a year ahead of me also. And he's like, well, we have this thing that we do with really smart kids like you and Natalie that are too smart to learn in public school, which is true, but it's also they want to get rid of me. And he said,
right,
we'll let you go to Jamestown Community College 10 miles away and take college classes, but you'll get college credit and high school credit for them. You won't ever come to this school except at the end of the year. You'll come and pick up your diploma. And I was like,
nice.
Cool,
yeah.
two for one. So yeah. At 17, I had my own apartment that my dad was paying for, although that sounds really cush, but it was actually like really ghetto. Do you remember, where was I living?
Oh,
did you meet me at
Faulkner Street or something? Yeah.
Curtis? Okay, Faulkner Street. That's the house where my roommates were later murdered by their childhood friend after
and
I moved.
Yeah, I didn't know about that. No.
Yeah, but that was like a movie, man, from what I heard.
Wow! Yeah, that
yeah. This
that was
this
freaky.
Guy, this guy, this friend of ours, Greg Bowles, and his brother Daryl Bowles, and my friend Bob Blood. Bob Blood had been my roommate there. I'd moved to Virginia and then D.C. and he had got. I don't know if Greg and Daryl. I think Daryl was living there and Greg was just visiting. And their childhood buddy Brian Ditcher, who was out of his mind, maybe on drugs, maybe not, but like. Went into the house with a shotgun, you know, and this was someone who was welcome in the house anytime. So they just saw him walk in, like, oh, you have a shotgun, cool. And then he started shooting people. Like, he shot Daryl in the chest, and Daryl was like, well, you shot me, well, just, you know, and then died. The other two guys jumped out of a second-story window, like, broke the window and jumped out, and... You know, Daryl slowly died or quickly died. It took a few minutes probably because he was talking after he got shot. And Brian, like, left the shotgun there, got in his car, drove to an all-night diner. And he was the only person in there besides the waitress. And he ordered a cup of coffee. No, hot cocoa. This is the part that's like a movie. he ordered a cup of hot cocoa, drank it, and then calmly said to her, can I use the phone? I need to turn myself into the police. I've done something horrible. And she's like, yeah, I want you to get out of here.
But I want a tip first.
I want a tip first. Here's your tip. Don't murder your friends. I was in prison for about 20 years and then went to Gowanda Mental Institution, and he's still there. Like, wow. You know, that guy, he's so freaky and like unrehabable that they won't let him out. I guess.
Now,
I'm fine with that.
Were any of those people at that Halloween party that we had that one time?
Those people were all at that Halloween party we had.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking. And that was another story, right?
The one where the house got trashed by everyone except me?
Yeah. Because I remember picking you up the next day, remember?
Yeah.
And we were trying to break in to get your equipment, but I think it was already too late.
Well, like, because the landlord had put a lock on it. But, well, it wasn't, I don't know if it was the next day. Yeah, it was. So what happened was those same people, those so-called friends of mine, this is before the murder, you know, they thought punk rock meant destruction, which I didn't think it does. But they, so we had parties there quite regularly, and we had a drum set, and we had guitars and basses, and we'd jam, and Greg would sing, or other people would sing, and there were usually, like, you know, lots of beer, lots of weed, lots of girls. And this particular Halloween party, there were no girls, there was no weed, there was only beer. So, like, these basically animal type dudes. Not Daryl. Daryl, the one who got killed, was the cool guy of that. Greg Bowles was insane. I didn't like him, really. He was kind of creepy, and I later found out he went to a mental hospital and jail from, he'd been molesting these, like, six-year-old girls from, like, he'd been their babysitter and a friend of the family. I'm not going to say the family's name, but, because I don't want to embarrass the kids, because they're adults now, but,
right.
And I wouldn't say it on air if they were kids, but he, yeah, it turned out, like, these girls that he'd been the family friend, like, you know, like, these girls called him Uncle Greg. You know, they were that close in the family, and he'd been babysitting them since they were, like, four. And when they turned 14, one of them finally said to their parents, like, you know, Uncle Greg's been touching us in that place for 10 years, you know. And yeah, gosh, did you know that? Did I tell you that
before? Well, no. It's creepy. Yeah, I didn't know that either. Like, it's hard to believe, man.
Hard to fathom. Yeah, yeah. That guy's creepy. So yeah. These guys, you know, had this twisted idea of punk rock and put him in a room full of dudes with a bunch of beer and no girls and no weed to calm them down, and they decided to break things. And they totally trashed the house. I mean, they broke most of the windows. They broke most of the, like, hand-turned wooden rungs out of the staircase. They found some, like, 8 gallons of oil-based house paint in the basement and opened it and poured it all over the rugs and all over the wood and everywhere. They broke the masonry on that front porch by just slam dancing into it. Okay. This was like something out of a bad movie about bad people. Yeah. So next morning I wake up like I went to sleep at like 4 a.m. So while this happened, I was sitting on the refrigerator watching it and not smiling and not participating. And I went to bed at, like, you know, 4 a.m. when it was over. Woke up at 6 a.m. with a cop standing over me in my room. And he said, "What's your name?" And I said, "Michael, what's yours?" And I'll tell you more of the story when we get back from this trip to the free market.
Listening to the Freedom Fiends, an invigorating alternative to those other shows.
Ever struggle for the right thing to say at a party? Want something to break the ice? Get the free Freedom Fiends Android app, Pocket Alibi. Pocket Alibi will help you have things to say. It'll replace verbal communication when you're not speaking with somebody.
I value your input.
It'll make you the hit of any party.
Not my circus, not my monkeys.
Will it work?
Not a guarantee.
It's a great icebreaker, too. Comes loaded with hundreds of original funny sayings with great voices and great recording quality. It's arranged into 7 categories. Disclaimers.
You should never do the thing I'm talking about.
Excuses.
I'm sorry, sir. An older girl told me to do it.
Advice. Fun too.
Get off me, kitty.
Libertarian pickup lines.
Hey, baby, hold my camera while I yell at this meter maid.
State speech is hate speech.
Bark, bark for the state.
Get Pocket Alibi today on Google Play for free. Again, search for Pocket Alibi. That's Pocket Alibi. A-L-I-B-I.
Pocket Alibi, Pocket Alibi, Pocket Alibi, Pocket Alibi, Pocket Alibi.
Does this app make me look fat?
Michael Dean, I'm talking to Phil Warmoth. Is that how you say your name?
Warmoth. Yeah. Been called worse, man.
It has worm in it, so we like worms, although not the socialist kind, which we'll talk about later, but because socialism gives you worms. But on this show, we say worms as sort of like it's our aloha. It means everything. It means hello, goodbye. It generally means, like, I agree with you, brother, like the old hip-hop thing from the 80s. Word. We say worms.
Worms.
So, worms. So where was I? I was waking up in 1980-something with a cop in my room standing over my bed saying, "What's your name, boy?" I think he said boy. And I said, Michael, what's yours? And he said, don't be smart. Get up. We need to talk. And, you know, I realized right then, like, cops don't want you smart. Like, he really literally said, don't be smart. You know, they want you dumb. And the interesting thing is, did you know, Phil, that recently there was a court case, I think it was in Maryland, where a guy who tried to become a cop was refused to be allowed to be a cop because he scored too high on the IQ test. So he sued the county.
Wow.
Yeah, and apparently that's a thing. Like, you know, for sergeants and detectives, they want people a little smarter, like probably a little less smart than you and me would be a smart detective cop. Hmm. But for beat cops, they don't want you stupid, although a lot of them are, but they want you average intelligence, maybe 5 points, give or take, because smart people start to question what they're doing when they're doing things like that.
Wow.
Yeah. So this cop's standing over my bed in Jamestown, New York at 8 Curtis Street, if you want to go look at the place. And says, you know, get out of bed. We need to talk. And, you know, I had a pounding hangover. People were sniffing glue at my house that night. Do you remember that?
What? No.
Man. No. So I had rubber cement for something. You know, I was doing some kind of arts and crafts with it. And, I was making a zine. Didn't we make a fanzine, like a zine, a poetry zine?
Yeah,
like
we did, man. Page? We were ahead of our time, I think.
Yeah. I think we used it for page layout. You know, like when cut and paste wasn't something literally. You did on the keyboard. It was literally cutting and pasting.
Yeah.
So I had rubber cement. And so everyone's out of beer and there's no other drugs. And all these people are in my room hanging out, smoking cigarettes. And they're like, dude, you've got glue. And I made some joke about like, yeah, punk rockers sniff glue, don't they? And they're like, you know, Greg Bowles, of course, opened it up and started sniffing. And I was like, man, I was kidding. And he's like, no. And he starts huffing it. And then he like grabs some toilet paper and pours a big handful on it and just starts huffing it. And he's like, whoa, this is great. And I'm like, oh, you guys are disgusting. And then I'm like, here, give it to me. I want some. I want to try it. So we're all sniffing glue. Boy, how many people, I bet I'm the only person on talk radio this week who started a story with, I was sniffing glue and, blah, you know, I mean, I've heard a lot of people talk about, you know, the drugs they used to do and now they're sober. And I used to do a lot of drugs and I don't do drugs anymore. But I don't think I've ever heard a story other than from the Ramones of back when I was sniffing glue. Yeah. So we were sniffing glue. So I had a pounding glue hangover and this cop standing over me. And like, so basically what happened was the landlord's henchmen had been driving by and had seen from the outside that the house had been wrecked. And they looked in the window and they called the cops. So the cops came and they basically like threw us out with what we could, with like the clothes on our back. And like, you know, I think they let me take something, but the landlord's henchmen stole all our equipment. You know, like the police stood there while the henchmen stole everything we had of value and put it in their truck and said, you know, this is to pay for what you did. And we couldn't do anything because there were like two armed cops there, you know, in cahoots with these people. What they did was illegal. That was actually illegal, you know, but I didn't know. I didn't know that.
How would you know, man? You know?
Yeah. I mean, that's like feudalism kind of police work, you know?
It wasn't all your gear new. I thought you had like, didn't you just get a bunch of gear?
I had $2,000 worth of gear, which was now would be about $6,000 worth of gear. And Greg Bowles had like a crappy broken guitar that was worth like $75. That's what they took of his. He did all the damage, most of it. It was just him and me that were still there. Like everyone else had gone after they broke everything. So the cops stole all our stuff and just like threw us out. You know, and I went and stayed with this woman who later became the mother of my kid, who my kid later passed away at 22 of cancer. You met my kid the day I met my kid because I was kept seeing my kid. Yeah.
That's another story.
That's another story when we get back from the trip to the market. I'll write that one down. Meeting Amelia.
Wow. Yeah. And you filled in the
Michael Dean.
holes on that one for me, man. I didn't remember. I mean, I remember it, but I didn't know.
The Freedom Fiends now have a free app for your Android phone, tablet, phablet, or other Chrome robot turd. Available now from the Google Play Store, Amazon, and FreedomFiends.com. Lovingly handcrafted by head hamster Michael W. Dean, the Freedom Fiends radio app is like having a virtual libertarian re-education camp in your pocket. It's your gateway to the exclusive, high-demand group that is the Freedom Fiends. Install the Freedom Fiends radio Android app today. It's free, and of course, it's covered by the BIPCOT No Government License. And get ready for LibPair with the Freedom Fiends radio app for Android worms.
Yeah, we meow here, Phil.
Meow. Worms.
Worms.
Meow.
You know, there's probably people going like, I don't understand. Why am I doing this over accent? I don't understand this radio show. Because most radio shows, most talk radio on this network and others is on this glorious network and all the lesser networks is, you know, people just reading the newspaper and talking about the tyranny and talking about how horrible the government was to you today. And, you know, I am concerned with that, but I kind of feel like that becomes same book, different chapter every day. So I like to just talk, and I do throw in the little, you know, kind of woke political statements. Like in the last half hour, I did mention the fact that in a lot of places, if you are too intelligent, you cannot get a job as a police officer. What else did I mention? Oh, that the cops stood there and helped somebody rob me. And the thing was, with that situation, was I didn't do any of the damage. And later, after my equipment was stolen and I went and made a baby with that woman who turned out to be a lesbian who was looking to have a baby, but I didn't know that. But we made a beautiful baby, but then she died. But that's a whole different story. So I ended up going to court because the landlord took me to court and I was the only one they could find because everybody else were, you know, went back to Salamanca where they're from and just scattered to the winds and went back to their trailer parks or whatever. And not that that's bad, but they were just bad people who happened to come from trailer parks. Trailer parks are not bad. Eminem came from a trailer park, and he's wonderful. But I didn't do any of the damage, and I got taken to court by the landlord. Like, after he stole my equipment when I didn't do any of the damage and took a lot more of my equipment than the guy who actually did the damage, who just didn't own anything, really. Now, at that time, I had my guitar, or no, I had a guitar amp that belonged to Greg over at Tony Yannick's house, this guy that you and I are playing in a band with called the Armless Children. So when I went to court and the judge asked me, and it wasn't, you know, there was no jury, it was just a civil proceeding. And the judge asked me, you know, I got served papers, like I had to go to court or there'd be a warrant. So I went to court and hoped I could be logically argue with the judge. No, logic doesn't work on judges. There's another bit of truth. Sometimes logic doesn't work on judges, often. Especially if the, you know, in a situation like this, like a landlord that owns multiple buildings in a small town probably plays golf with or goes gets hookers with the judge. Allegedly, not a guarantee. So the judge asked me, like, you know, why didn't you go call the police? Why didn't you call the police? And I said, we don't have a phone. And he said, why didn't you walk to a payphone? And he said, I know where you live. I know there's a payphone a block away from there. And I said, because I was staying to make sure my equipment didn't, my property didn't get damaged. And that wasn't good enough for him. And he said the landlord could keep my equipment. And I was in the process of countersuing the landlord when I just left town because I had better things going on. Because a friend of mine lived in Maryland and I'd moved to stay with him for the rest of the summer and lived in D.C. after making a baby. So, this amp that belonged to Greg that I had borrowed, it was over at Tony's. When I moved to D.C. and Virginia and Maryland, I took that amp with me. It was worth $300, and I felt like it was decent trade for the fact that I'd lost $2,000 worth of equipment for Greg's actions. So
right.
I found out later, after that murder happened, like it said in the paper that, you know, Brian, like the murderer and the murdered and the murdered's brother, Greg and Daryl, Brian, Daryl, and Greg had gone on a road trip to Virginia together. Like the paper was trying to show this fact that they were buddies a month ago, you know, and how weird this was. Oh, when the guy called the police drinking his hot cocoa. He said to the police, he called 911 and said, "This is Brian Ditcher. I'm at blah, blah, blah restaurant or coffee shop. I just killed a satanic drug dealer." These guys were neither. Like, maybe they had a little weed and sold some to Brian because he begged for it, but they weren't dealers. They were not Satanists. They were just into punk rock and heavy metal and, like, you know, had an Iron Maiden t-shirt or something with 666 on it. So Brian was just insane. He was doing a lot of speed, too. So he went crazy and thought they were Satanists or the devil or something, which justified killing his childhood friends. So I took this app with me, and it turns out, like, the three of them drove to Virginia looking to kill me and take that app back. Like, probably spent more money on the trip than the thing was worth if they stayed in any, like, cheap hotels and ate dinner somewhere and paid for gas. So, I mean, it was just, like, the principle for them. Like, you know, I don't care that he got all his equipment taken. I'm going to kill him because he took something small of mine. This is actually the last time I stole anything, but I would say I didn't steal it. I would say that is absolutely ethical reparations, probably not legal. But, hey, the stuff was stolen illegally from me by the landlord. So it all goes around and comes around. And the guy turned out to be a child, serial, a decade-long child molester of little girls that were trusted family friends, parents of the girls. So the way I found that out was when I moved to D.C., I lived in, first I was homeless in D.C., in Georgetown. And then it started to get cold, and you don't want to be homeless in the winter in D.C. In the summer, it's kind of fun. It's like a picnic. But in the winter, it's really bad cold there. And so I got a job, and I got a place to live. And it was in Arlington. I commuted every day across the bridge, took the subway. And I stayed in this house that was like it was weird. It was like a dorm rooming house for people that were older than college. Because it was like the landlord, like we all lived in the same house and shared the kitchen and stuff, but we paid the landlord directly. And like, if someone moved out, you didn't owe the landlord his rent like you would if you were renting it and then had roommates. So it was like a boarding house. And there was actually a guy there who was later taken away by the Secret Service because he told his shrink he was going to kill the president. That's the second person I've known in my life that was taken away for saying he was going to kill the president. The other was an ex-Navy, ex-con cook at the church farm school. So weird, wow. Man. Jody Foster's army. But yeah, so they, like, I went back, you know, I was homeless in D.C. Then I was had this weird rooming house in Arlington. And then I went somewhere else. I think I moved to Charlottesville pretty quick after that. But then I came back to visit some people in D.C. and I went over to the house where I used to live, the rooming house, to get my mail because I'd forgotten. I didn't know you could forward it. I didn't know how to adult. I was bad at adulting back then. So I went back to get my mail, and my old roommate said, "There are these dudes here looking for you," and they were mad. And they had New York State license plates and a pickup truck, and there were three of them, and they looked like, two of them looked like punk rock. Well, he said one of them looked like a punk rocker with a mohawk. The other looked like a metalhead, which was Daryl. And the other looked like a redneck. They were a weird mix. And I was like, oh, I don't know who that is. But after I read in the paper, I found out that that's where they'd come up to kill me.
Wow.
So, yeah, I'm the luckiest boy in the world. You know, well, go ahead.
Oh, well, I got a connection to that because, remember,
nice.
You kind
segway,
of filled,
brother,
yeah,
segway.
Yeah, you filled in some gaps, man. So after, what, 30-something years, the story started
Freedom
to become
Fiends,
clear.
Filling in,
yeah,
the gaps. Man. Filling in the gaps since 2011.
So it was a It was a Friday the 13th, and a certain group, I'm not going to mention its name, was rumored to be coming to Jamestown and taking over the place. And there was this big
wait,
plan.
Wait, a rock group or a gang?
No, this is more of like a satanic gang. It was causing...
Oh, so you're talking about the Satanic Panic? Say the name,
yeah,
of the group.
Yeah, that's it.
Hell's
that's
Angels?
It. No.
They were always there.
Nah, man. But anyway...
They weren't... Say the name of the group.
There were signs all over town, and then people started complaining that their small animals were missing, and
like, that was Greg and Brian.
Well, this is what I'm saying. Yeah, I never knew that. So I unknowingly walked right into the middle of this whole thing, right? So I just visited my grandmother, who gave me a bunch of my grandfather's like vintage clothes, and I had this really nice black raincoat, right? Of course, I had hair
trench
back then.
Coat.
Yeah,
trench coat mafia.
Yeah, I had the blonde hair, the blue eyes, the everything, right? And so
and you're tall. You're like 6'1" or something.
Not quite. No, but
what are you? You're tall.
I'm like 5'10", man.
But, yeah, I'm 5'3", so you're tall to me.
So if you can imagine Brooklyn Square, it's kind of a sketchy place in Jamestown. And I was walking across town to my friend's house, and I saw this group of people, kind of like redneck-looking people, and I didn't think much of it. So I'm walking down the street. Next thing I know, some guy comes up and asks me for a cigarette. And you know what that means, right?
That means he's going to either rob you or beat you up, probably.
Right, right.
Or he wants a cigarette, or all of the above.
It's never happened that they wanted a cigarette with me. But anyway, so long story short, man, they thought I was a member of this group, and they jumped me, man, and it got pretty bad, man. It got to the point where some dude was trying to stab me with a piece of plexiglass, and I fought him off, man. And I'm like, what is this about, man? And they said, well, you know, we thought you were one of them. And I'm like, nah, man, I'm not one of them, and I'm not one of you either, man. And, but now I understand why that whole thing happened, because it was fueled by those guys, man.
Yeah, well, it wasn't just them, but it was them and some buddies from Salamanca that moved to Jamestown, killed pets, you know, painted blood, like inspired by Manson stuff. Yeah, creepy dudes. Like, so let's see. Let's recap that group. A guy who murdered his friend, a guy who molested children for years, and people that killed animals for kicks.
Yeah.
Boy. Man, I'm glad we got better friends now, Phil.
Yeah, me too, man.
Yeah. Wow. I don't have any friends except you.
Hey, my wife.
No, I got friends, but I don't have any friends in my town, which is by choice. But, you know, our professor, I forget his name, but one of our professors, the guy that taught pop culture at JCC, wrote a book called Satanic Panic, and it's on Amazon, and it's about that whole thing. And it's a weird kind of book. I kind of think it's an exploitation book, because it looks like it doesn't really, like, it kind of would appeal to both sides. It would appeal to the, you know, the conservative people who are scared of everything, who think, oh my God, and it would also, like, you know, appeal to the people who are into that kind of stuff. Like, it doesn't draw a conclusion, and it just kind of gathers a bunch of news stories. But let me see. Let me see the name of this book. But he was like, Jeffrey Victor.
Yeah, I remember.
And he was, like, doing the talk show circuit. I mean, this book was a bestseller. Huh. He was the guy, I remember that he used to drink booze during his class. I had a, like, 8:30 a.m. class with him. And he'd have coffee. He'd have a coffee cup the whole time with him, and he'd fill it a few times from a thermos. And, like, at the beginning of the class, he'd be, like, almost asleep, and by the end of the class, he'd be, like, up on his desk, gesticulating wildly, talking about, you know, about the Warhol.
Was that a deviant behavior class?
No, but he was exhibiting examples of it, because I would go. I would smell it on him when I'd go talk to him. I liked him. I'd go talk to him a lot after class, because pop culture, man. We're living it. We're soaking in it right now, Phil. All right, we'll be back after this trip to the free market.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and some of his weird friends. And yes, we're broadcasting this into space.
Is your child defiant, independent, annoyingly inquisitive? After a long, hard day of following the rules, who wants to deal with troublesome kids? 49% of children suffer from oppositional defiant disorder, or ODD. Symptoms of ODD include independent thought, rampant creativity, and failure to submit to authority. But now there's a solution. The good people at Pilfer can help you with their time-release, once-daily capsule, Compliacin. Your child won't be able to form his own opinions, let alone express them. It maintains your child's ability to go to a state-run school and perform simple tasks around the house. You won't have to worry about parenting, and the school won't have to deal with your kid asking questions. Compliacin. You'll go from this.
Quit telling me what to do! Quit telling me what to do! Quit telling me what to do!
To this.
Good morning, Mother. I love going to school. And this week we're learning all about how the government is our federal family and they're here to help us.
Compliacin. Talk to your school psychiatrist and ask for it by name.
Since there's a delay between us and the studio of about a quarter second each direction, you know, when I just went, yeah, 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 like on beat with that, that'll be totally off beat when you listen to the MP3. And I am going to put this on the new website for you that I haven't taught you how to put stuff on yet. I made a website for you. It's kind of cool. You said you wanted a website for years and like you didn't know how to do it. And we're on the phone here, and I'm like, I'll do it tonight. Let's do it.
Yeah. And you did. So
your, your website is jipprod.org. And that's, I usually spell things out phonetically. It's Juliet India Papa Prod, P-R-O-D, jipprod.org. And that's going to be for your poetry and your friend's poetry, right? It's not a collective.
Right.
It's a gang. It's a gang, right?
It's a gang, yeah. Not your father's
collective
gang.
Collective's a communist.
Right.
Yeah, because your father was communist. No, my father wasn't. My father was upset he didn't get to go fight Nazis in World War II because he was a farmer. He had a dairy farm with like 75 head of cattle. So they made the government made him stay home and make milk for the troops.
Interesting. So, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Hmm.
Yep. So, hey, I have a little news you can use here. So I ordered something on Amazon. It was like $23, and it was the wrong size. And I went to do a return, and like, okay, here's the UPS thing that you need to take to UPS, and here's the prepaid mailing with our address on it. Print this out. And I'm like, $23 to, like, interrupt my day and go to UPS, man, that is just not worth it. So I wrote him and I said, my wife and I share a car, so like to do this during UPS hours, I would have to take a taxi. So I wrote him and I said, you know, this isn't acceptable. I was polite but firm, which is how you should deal with things like this. You don't yell at them and you don't wuss out. You just politely and firmly state what your needs are. And I said, you know, it's going to cost me about $23 for the taxi there and back to go to UPS. This isn't worth me doing. Do you have another solution? And like, she's like, let me check, you know, typed back to me, let me check. And this is 24/7. I did this at the start of the show, during the show, and while I was talking. So she wrote me back like a minute later and said like, yes, just throw that product away and we will credit you for it and put it in your account. So news you can use, man. You don't have to always accept the first offer. I had something like that recently too. It was like, I ordered a used keyboard. It was $50 and it kind of worked, but it kind of didn't work. And I wrote him back and said I wanted a refund. And they said, well, on eBay, the seller said, I'll give you 60% of the money back. And I'm like, no. I said, give it all back to me, and I'll be sure and write you a great review saying your customer support's great. And that's not threatening or bartering or anything. It's bargain. It's basically saying, like, you know, if you want a good review, do the right thing. And he did. Because it would have been, you know, more trouble than it's worth to send back a $50 keyboard. So there you go. So I have a broken keyboard in my basement for the cats to walk on. So we had a band called The Armless Children, which the name is from a poem you wrote. I'm an armless child in a candy store. I've been shut out. I've been locked out. They shut the door. That's all I remember. What's the rest of it? You know, off the top of your head?
Yeah, there's only a few more surviving lines. look, they say, but you cannot touch. If I had an arm, I'd break my crutch.
That's it.
I don't know what the hell that means. What the heck that means?
Yeah, there you go. Yeah,
I don't know what that means. But nevertheless, that was kind of the fuel, man, and things progressed.
That was back when you wrote poems that rhymed,
right?
I like your poems now, but they barely rhyme. Sometimes they rhyme, but your poem's really good. You and I have been doing some music together. I've really dug it, and people can get it at jipprod.org, and I'm going to put this episode up on jipprod.org. And then this weekend, I'll probably teach you how to use jipprod.org to put your own things on it.
Yeah, it nice. No, website. This is something, this collaboration is something I've been wanting to do for a long time, but I could never find anyone that was willing to do it because the marriage of spoken word and music to me is like, that's the limit, man. That's like,
yep,
it's good.
And I'm the guy to talk to learn how to do stuff well for no money. Like you, we're about to go out here, but I'll finish this story real quick. You were going to pay a guy $100 to rent his studio time in his home in your area. And he was like cranky with you, and you'd say like, when are we going to do that? And he'd be like, yeah, and look at his watch and kind of mad dog you. And I'm like, Phil, for $100, you can build your own studio at home and record. And I showed you how to do it. And not only did you record, you can be on the Freedom Fiends once in a while now. You going to come back sometime? I like you having
me on. Absolutely, man.
Cool, man.
It's empowering, man.
It is. Worms. We'll be back after some news that will scare you, then will make you feel better.
Biptunia, music for the drive to Alpha Centauri. Biptunia's influences are Gary Numan, Brian Eno, Pink Floyd, David Bowie, Led Zeppelin, Grateful Dead, Frank Zappa, Robert Fripp, Blondie, Kraftwerk, and Dead Kennedys. Biptunia styles are trip-hop, rock, pop, glam, industrial, ambient, jazz, and space. Plus, it's got cats and is covered by the BIPCOT NoGov license. You can download Biptunia's music free. Go to biptunia.com. That's B-I-P-T-U-N-I-A. Bravo, India, Papa, Tango, Uniform, November, India, Alpha. Biptunia.com.
Broadcasting from the Libertarian Reeducation Center's Low Orbit Ion Cannon, high atop Financial Beast Plaza, on the artificial satellite LibPair 2017 in the Alpha Centauri region. Please insert the purple wire into your cortex now. Freedom Fiends is covered by the BIPCOT No Government License. This allows use and reuse by anyone except governments. Learn more at BIPCOT.org. So, Phil Warmoth, my good friend from college. You know, you're one of two people I've known that long I still talk to. And I talk to you a lot more. The other is Skip Lunch. You know Skip Lunch, right?
Right, sure, man.
Yeah, he lives in China. He married a woman half his age. He's like 50. Well, he was 40, married a woman who was 20. And he's like 50 now. I think he's older than me, actually. I think he's old like you, 54. Old, I'm old, and my skin is cold. So, let's talk about, before we get back to good times. You know, there was a third guy that I was talking to, this guy named Little Mike, who I've known longer than you. I've known him, no, I met him in D.C. I met him after you. And I finally got rid of him because he was a negative person. Like, he was a person that kind of like, not a jock, but talked like a jock. He's actually like somebody who got beat up by jocks. But at age like 48, he was still like, oh, you suck, man. You're stupid. Like that kind of, I guess it was showing love, but it's like, I don't need that, you know?
Right.
Yeah. Dude talk. I call it dude talk. And if you do dude talk beyond 20 years of age, you're stilted and got work to do, brother.
Right.
Brothers and sisters. So, I want to talk before we get back to Jamestown, back to the place we're glad we left. The place that we're not on the radio, and I tried to get on the radio for like 2 years. I called the station there like once a week for like 2 years until the guy finally said, you know, I'm never going to put you on. You can just stop calling. I checked you out. It's not our thing. So there's this thing called Cell 411. Do you know what Cell 411 is, Phil?
No, I don't.
It's an app for Android and iPhone. You're on an iPhone, right? You're one of the beautiful people.
Yeah.
One of the beautiful people. I make fun of people that use Apple just because, I don't know, it just works, but it's also like twice the price, and then it updates every year and doesn't work. It doesn't just work. And you know, it keeps you in jail. Like Steve Jobs made jail cool, but it's a beautiful jail. It's a gilded cage, right? So Cell 411 is this app made by my friend Virgil Viduva, friend of the Freedom Fiends, friend of Liberty, friend to all men. He's all things to all men. All the men, the women want to love him and the men want to be him. He's a success story, man. He's a guy who grew up in communist Romania on a house with a dirt floor, came to America at like 19 after watching his president murdered on killed on TV. That's how they ended communism in Romania. And he cheers that moment. And, yeah, that sounds interesting. I'm not going to say that sounds cool, because if you say killing a politician sounds cool, you know, they'll knock at your door and take you away. As I said, I've known two people who've had that happen. Lived with one of them. But, yeah, so he came to America at 19 with $100 that his dad had sold the family piano to get him a ticket and $100. And he came to America, and, like, this guy worked really, really hard, you know, worked a lot of jobs, has a beautiful family, beautiful wife and kids, and started investing in cryptocurrencies like 3 or 4 years ago, you know, when most people were still saying, like, that's a bubble, that's not going to last, that's not real money, you know, and, like, became a millionaire and kept his job for a while. He only recently quit his job. He had a job that, like, after he became a millionaire, he kept doing his job for a few months and finally quit it. And now he's, like, you know, from communism and dirt floor to driving an Audi and making software that saves the world. So Cell 411 is this free software that it's an app you put on your phone. So instead of calling 911, you use the Cell 411 app and you call your friends. So basically, you make cells with your friends. Like, you and your friends get this app and you agree to be each other's backup. And, you know, say you have 5 or 6 people in your town that are in your cell. If you're in an emergency that you'd rather have your friends come than the cops come, you just hit the cell 411 button and it instantly calls your friends and tells them your location and gives them turn by turn directions to get there. And there's like a circle button on the front of it with different parts of the circle or different things. But if you just hit it anywhere, it'll send an alert anyway. But, like, you know, one says I'm being bullied. One says I'm pulled over by the police. One says medical emergency. You know, one says car broke down. And basically, like, you know, you send this, you hit the button, it sends an alert to your friends, and they can write back whether they can, you know, like, I can come. There's a drop down. Like, I can be there in 2 minutes, 5 minutes, 10 minutes, or I can't come. And you can also video with it, and it streams the video to cell 411 servers. So, like, let's say the cop starts hassling you or someone's bullying you. You can start filming them. And if they, like, take your phone or crush it or steal it, like, the footage up to that point is not destroyed. Because it's on cell phone and servers, and you have like a week or two, I think, to get it. It's a pretty cool thing, man. It's my wife and I are in a cell because we don't have any friends by choice, but here. Not that I live in a bad place. I don't want people coming to my house and bugging me. So my friends are all far away, and just, you know, I can answer their email or Skype or Fiend phone or whatever, or not, you know, so.
Right.
So that's some news you can use, man. Get cell 411, and there's also ride sharing on it, like, you know, with Uber, but you don't have to pay a cut to cell 411. You arrange it with people, and you know, it's person to person without a middleman. And you can pay them in cash, crypto, gold, silver, chickens, whatever you want, man. So there it is. So the other news you can use is, so the thing about my return to Amazon, did I tell you that on the break, or did I say it on the air, Phil?
I don't know if you finished the story on the air.
Okay, but I started on the air?
Yeah. Yeah, you got to the point where everything got taken care of because you were...
Oh, that's the end of the story.
...polite and firm, yeah.
I just didn't remember if I did on the air or not. Mm-hmm. It kind of all runs together. Sometimes I record the whole show on my end, including us talking during the breaks, and then release that on my Patreon channel. And I do have a Patreon channel if you want to help out with the Freedom Fiends or with all the wonderful things I do for the world. You can go to patreon.com/fiend. That's me. And you can donate, you know, $1 a month, $2 a month, $50 a month, $10,000 a month, whatever you think the Freedom Fiends are worth to you. And if you listen to one more minute without paying, you're stealing. No, I'm kidding. That's from the Simpsons episode where Homer made a pledge to public TV to get them to shut up. And then ended up having to go live on an island to get away from the collection people at PBS.
That's
and he
harsh.
Ended up like he ended up being a missionary on this like uncontacted tribe island or barely contacted. And when he's getting off the plane, the cheery Christian couple that he's replacing for that year get on the plane and they're like, "Oh, I'm Craig and Amy," and they're like, "Oh, nice to meet you," and they're like, "Okay, bye. Don't let the bed bugs bite." seriously, because it's an island. So we were in this band, the Armless Children. It was you singing and talking, me playing guitar, Tony Yannick playing drums. Was there a bass player? I don't remember.
Yeah, there was.
Different people.
Yeah. Who? Yeah. I can't remember.
Oh. That dude who's like total right wing loon now. Doug.
Yeah, he was the guy. Yeah, he was the guy with the wheels, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. What is it? Like, I think that's how the bass player in the Rolling Stones got the job. Like, he had the van. Yeah. Doug was a good guy. I liked him. Yeah. I liked him. I recently reconnected with him, but I told him I didn't love the military, and he got really mad at me. Like, you know, first we started talking, like, yeah, I like guns. You like guns? Yeah. So, you know, when I basically told him I'm pro-gun and anti-war, mm-hmm. he got really mad. You know, and I'm not a pacifist. I'm armed. And, you know, I don't love Islam. I pretty much really dislike Islam, but I don't hate Muslims. He hates Muslims. That's the difference. Like, I don't really like a Stone Age theology that, you know, that condemns gays and throws them off buildings and it treats women like crap. And I know they don't all do that. And I'm sure there's people listening who are like, I have a friend in America who is a white guy who grew up in Southern California and converted to Islam. And he's not like that at all. And I'm like, yeah, he's a kid that grew up in this culture. You know, it's cultural, basically. I'm just not into Stone Age thinking. And Stone Age is kind of an insult that sounds like, you know, 50,000 years ago. No, the Stone Age ended like, I don't know, 2,500 years ago, something like that. There were Abrahamic religions when the Stone Age was ending, basically, in the Bronze Age crossover there. So talk about the Armless Children. We played some gigs, didn't we, to like 8 cowboys in some bar somewhere?
Right. The one I remember most is, remember Student when, Union. Well, the Student Union one was good. I don't know how you arranged that, but I remember in between
I had
classes.
I had pictures of the dean of students doing things he shouldn't.
That's
no,
it.
I'm kidding,
that would explain it. Yeah. No, I remember Tony bringing a sheet of plywood and nailing his drum set down to it. I'm like, wow.
Oh, and they got mad.
Yeah, man. But
drummer Tony in the band Bomb used to nail his drums to the floor too and make people mad.
Yeah, I've never seen that before.
Yeah,
but
I'd
but
seen
maybe
it before by the time the other Tony did it.
But, like, maybe, you know, I remember the, what was that place? The Sheldon House or something? The College Zone?
Oh, the poetry reading that we did on Faulkner Street?
Yeah.
Wine and Cheese. We started a poetry club so we could do poetry readings. Like, you know, and the college provided that was sweet, man. They provided, like, it was like this nice house, like where, you know, like where white people would live or something.
Yeah.
Where we weren't allowed because we were from the other side of the tracks. And it was like they bought wine and cheese too.
Yeah, I couldn't believe you pulled that off. And then we got rough.
I've been doing that all my whole life. I've been pulling rabbits out of hats my whole life. You know, like that. I started with that, and then I work up to like having Robert Downey Jr. narrate my film, reading the narration I wrote, and him doing it for free. So,
wow, I didn't know that.
Yeah. So anyway, Sheldon House.
Did
Tony come to that? We didn't play at that.
No, we didn't play.
It
was just
poetry.
More. Yeah, it was more. But that was the kind of thing that brought like Rob Buck into the picture for us too.
Because, from the 10,000 Maniacs.
Because he was playing kind of spacey guitar stuff. And yeah, man.
Did he play with us at that?
Yeah,
like,
remember
Robert Fripp imitation?
Yeah, he did. Okay. Yeah. And then afterwards, he took us to this place on Second Street. I don't know if you remember that either, but
that little tiny like, speakeasy kind of bar.
Yeah, you had to.
How about a warning? You're about to share with my friend Michael W. Dean, a survivor, things about humanity and his methods for dealing with it. Brace yourself for some bare naked honesty. If you're willing to hear what Michael is saying, there are times when you'll laugh and times when you'll want to cry in the retelling of his truths. He has defined it so you can feel it. Take his example and live. I warned you earlier because this book is written in the same way Michael speaks. He's a straight shooter, a no pretense, a no excuses kind of guy that I love like a brother. Understanding how we are to deal with negative people, Michael has answers for you. The human race has its aberrations and monsters, and unfortunately, sometimes they are close to you. Michael gives you his take on them and how he handles the noise. I can guarantee you will pick up a tool to use from a user's manual for the human experience. As Michael says, his life is a teaching hospital.
A user's manual for the human experience. Kindle, paperback, and audiobook. Get it now on Amazon. The radio fired bullets. It's the name of our new song. I have so many websites that I've made and administer. I can't remember the name of all of them. I almost said the wrong one, the secret one, but... What's your web address? Let's see if you know it.
I know it. It's JIPPROD, jipprod.org.
He said pee-pee. Can you say that on radio? Yeah. So apparently. Apparently. Oh, you know, we have an app that I made called, what is it called? It's called Pocket Alibi.
What?
It has excuses for everything. Yeah,
really?
Let me show you some Pocket Alibi. Yeah. It's just a soundboard. It's got like recordings of different freedom fiends saying different disclaimers like
for entertainment purposes only.
Let me turn this up. It's too quiet. So, yeah, you can get that free if you go to all my apps are only for Android cuz I'm not the beautiful people. They won't let me make iPhone apps anymore, but here.
For entertainment purposes only.
This is just a joke.
If what you're about to do is illegal, you should immediately move to a hipper community.
May cause triggering.
You should never do that thing I'm talking about.
No electrical devices allowed.
May result in state beatings and or incarceration.
That's one of my favorites. State beatings and or incarcerations.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I think we got cut off, didn't we? With our story.
By what?
Talking about her.
By the free market. The free market cut us off. Darn free market. Those people selling things to people who want them. How dare they? So what was the story? Tell me the story, brother.
So yeah, I think we left off. We left the Sheldon house where we did our reading and
always stroke head.
Sorry, go ahead.
Wow, man. Anyway, yeah, so we ended up going to this hole in the wall place. You couldn't even tell.
Can you say that on radio?
Go ahead.
I think I did. Yeah.
Yeah. That's what brought this up was that phrase is in Pocket Alibi.
Nice. Yeah. Yeah. So we get the high sign. We got to enter this place and it was a whole nother culture. It had its own rules. I remember it had a straight jacket hanging on the wall, and if anyone misbehaved, they wrestle you down, put you in a straight jacket.
You talking about the speakeasy
the
place we did the poetry? Okay.
No, this was after, right? Took us there after. Yeah. Actually, one of my friends ended up getting the boot. It's not a good thing.
I ended up being in the house band there. Do you remember that? I was in this band with this guy that was like 80. No, probably 70, and like, it was a piano player and a dude, and this like lady playing a snare drum with brushes,
right?
And this other lady singing, and
she sang old like World War One songs.
Yeah,
remember?
Yeah. And I didn't know the tunes. The piano player would just say like a key of G minor, follow me, and I just watch his hands and play simple bass accompaniment and. The name he came up with the best name. It's the coolest band name I've ever been in. It was called Three Old Goats and a Kid.
I like that. We need a drum roll for that.
Yeah. I don't have that in Pocket Alibi. There is a laugh track though, if I can find it. Here's a good one. I like this one.
Not my circus. Not my monkeys.
That's a really funny thing to say when someone tries to get you to care about something that you don't care about.
Right.
Not my circus. Not my monkeys.
But that place was kind of like a circus, right? Because you never knew what to expect when you went there.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sometimes it'd be people just hanging out. Sometimes it'd be political discussion. Sometimes it would be some like impromptu poetry readings and stuff.
Buck played there too, like solo a few times.
Yeah. Out in the back. Remember that?
Yeah.
Back?
It was a long, thin, like what they call, it was probably previously what they call a railroad flat, which is an apartment that's like really long and thin and all the doors come off one hall, but where they just ripped out the rooms and made that place out of it. You know, I'll come back to that in a sec, but I remember the first time I really realized the world is not a beautiful place. It was when I lived in Jamestown, of course, because I lived in Westfield, which is like
Shangri-La. It's a beautiful place.
You know,
yeah.
It is. It is a beautiful place. And then I went to the big city. James Westfield, where I was born and raised, has a population of 3,000. Jamestown is 30,000 plus the college. And I remember down by that music store, the place where I used to go. So I made this, I did this, my last semester at JCC, I did an open, instead of going to class, I did my own project, and I just just played synthesizers and recorded it. And I didn't have a synthesizer, so I went to the music store and just recorded it with a tape recorder. I've been sampling since the 80s. We'll be back. I'll tell you about when I learned the world was not a beautiful place when we get back. Yeah.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and his weird friends, tasing you with liberty since 2011. Learn more at freedomfiends.com.
Hi, this is Mark Edge of Free Talk Live. Michael W. Dean's book, User's Manual for the Human Experience, changed my life. In a culture that attempts to turn you into a compliant victim, this book gives you implementable steps on everything from how to be aware of your environment walking down the street to business, to how to handle a toxic person in your life. If you're a human, you need to read this book at least once. Go to Amazon and get the Kindle version, or paperback, or an audiobook of A User's Manual for the Human Experience.
So, Phil.
Yeah.
So, when we played in the Armless Children, that band back in the early 80s, we played with his drummer named Tony Yannick. Now, did you meet him first or did I? How did we find him?
No, we met him at the same time.
Where?
We tracked him down, remember, that he was squatting in that abandoned house?
Oh, yeah. Like, didn't we just hear drums coming from that house and we needed a drummer, so we knocked on the door? Was that
I almost think we had a lead, like, because we found out about this band called Anthem.
I know what it was. Oh, Anthem. Yeah. I saw Anthem rehearse one time. But I think what happened was I asked the guy who owned the music store if he knew any drummers, and I think he's like, well, there's this guy. He's a really good drummer, but in my experience, really good drummer is almost always followed with a but. I mean, they hit things, you know. Think about the kind of people that attracts. So Tony kind of looked like Charles Manson, and he was like 10 years older than us at least. And he had a 17-year-old live-in girlfriend who was like a scared deer in the headlights. And he was very Christian. And he read the Bible, did not drink, did not do drugs, smoked like a chimney, was squatting. I don't know if he's squatting. It's kind of like in Fight Club, like, you know, run down house, and he's like Tyler Durden. I don't know if he was squatting or if he owned the place. Neither would surprise me. Yeah, but it was like this three-story, like, kind of be run down old, beautiful Victorian house.
Right, yeah.
And,
that one room with all the mattresses and the egg cartons all over the walls and stuff.
Yeah, and the sound still got out. You know, what a lot of people don't realize is there's a difference between soundproofing and sound conditioning, and this is news you can use. So, like, I see this, like, once a month someone writes me and they're like, oh, I heard you're the guy with the cheap audio advice. I actually have a website called Creamy Radio Audio that's got all my free cheap audio device and advice in one place, like on one page, creamyradioaudio.com. But people write me like, what's the best way to soundproof a room for no money? And what they're usually asking me is how to sound condition it. Now, let me tell you the difference. So, and by you, I mean Phil and the audience. So sound conditioning and soundproofing are not the same thing. And soundproofing is a lot harder and more expensive to do than sound conditioning. To do sound conditioning, you basically hang up sheets, or you hang up like fuzzy blankets. To do soundproofing, you need to like pour cement and have fiberglass like three layers in the walls. So soundproofing keeps sound from the outside out from coming in, and it keeps sound from the inside coming out. Sound conditioning doesn't do that. Sound conditioning prevents reverberation in the room and gives you like a dead sound, an acoustically dead sound. Most studios are both. And the room I'm in is both. It's sound conditioned because I hung little Walmart prayer rugs, like fake Persian rugs that cost $30 each. I got like 10 of them and hung them all over the walls. They don't cover the whole walls. That's what I realized, too, is for sound conditioning, you don't need to cover every wall. You just have to cover, like, a big space on each parallel wall. And that's another thing. Studios that are built to be studios don't have any parallel walls because parallel walls make bouncy sounds back that sound bad. So basically the idea is in a studio is you want an acoustically dead sound with no background noise. And if you want reverb, you add it later in the mix, either with hardware or software. But so Tony's place was very sound conditioned. I mean, that was like a padded cell, that room, which kind of fit Tony. He was great, but he was kind of nuts. We'll get into that. But I mean, I remember the cops like shining their light up at the window a few times. You remember that when we were playing there?
You never knew what was going to happen.
Yeah.
I remember the first time we met, I was speechless. I think for 2 hours I sat on the floor and just...
You and Tony.
Yeah. He was doing this thing where like he had a little vegetable garden out back and... He was cutting up
heirloom
some
seeds.
Must be, man. He's a man before his time. He was cutting up some carrots and he stopped and he said, "What if I cut my finger off? Would that still be me?" And that was like the introduction to Tony. And he blew my mind, man.
I remember one time, speaking of Tony cutting himself, one time he actually bled a lot when he played drums because he played so hard and he also was really poor, so he like would break drumsticks and then just duct tape them and then they break again.
Right.
Yeah. So he had like splinters on all his drumsticks and he'd get cut a lot and bleed. And I remember one time he cut himself and he's bleeding and he's like, "Wow, look at that. I'm bleeding." Like he was fascinated with the body and that and life and nature and himself as nature, which is kind of cool. Mm-hmm. You know, it wasn't really creepy. It was just like interesting. And I walked over to him, you know, being the inquisitive little animal child that I was at 19. I went over, I walked around the drum set, still wearing my guitar around my neck, and like rubbed my finger on his finger, got blood on it, and tasted it. And this is like pre-AIDS. Like that wasn't an issue. And Tony was like, "Why the heck did you do that? That's evil, man. Don't do that." Like it was like biblically wrong to him somehow that I tasted his blood.
Wow.
Yeah. You know what the funniest, we'll get back to Tony, but the funniest example. Oh, this would get us kicked off stations. I can't talk about it. About the time I shot holy water. Nah, let's not talk about that. All right, so Tony Yannick. So here's the thing about Tony Yannick. Like, I've pretty much stalked all my old friends on the internet. I think that's how I reconnected with you, actually.
Yeah, probably.
Like, I found your book, Venus Remembered, and found your email address somewhere, which is funny because you're barely on the internet, man. But I actually found an email that... It looked like it was like your publisher, but it turned out to be you, which is your publisher.
Okay.
So,
right.
Yeah. So I found you and I was like, "Hey, I'm trying to get a hold of this is the guy I went to college with. Can you tell him Michael Dean wants to get a hold of him?" And like an hour later, you wrote me back like, "Hey, what's up?" This is about 2 months ago and we've been talking a lot since and I'm loving it. We get along well. But Tony Yannick was a weird one, man. I was kind of afraid of him and in awe of him at the same time. He's one of those people.
Yeah, I never felt afraid of him. He was
not afraid of him. I was afraid of disappointing him. Like I think he was kind of a father figure to me, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, I can see that. No,
when I tasted his blood and he said that was bad, like I felt really bad, you know.
Yeah.
Now I'd be like if someone said, first of all, I wouldn't drink someone's blood now. It's weird, but if someone said that to me, like if someone said like I'm disappointed in you, that's not right with nature, I would just laugh at them. But
I saw him as a prophet and a holy man. That's how I saw Tony.
But gutter holy man. But, you know, and I don't put anybody on a pedestal. And I think if I met Tony Yannick now and he was the same he was then, I don't think I'd be very impressed with him at all. I'm kind of not impressed. For one thing, I'm kind of not impressed with people that are always poor and don't want to work. I mean, like, he wanted to work. He worked really hard at like his house and he had jobs and stuff here and there, but you know, he would constantly, and I think he was a really hard worker, I would be willing to bet, but he constantly lost jobs. Like that's kind of a warning sign for me of someone that I don't really probably want to hang out with. But I was intrigued by him so much that probably a couple of years ago I looked for him on the internet. He does not exist. That guy's either dead or has never owned a computer. I mean, even public records, I couldn't find. I spelled the name all the ways I could think of. I'm pretty sure it's Y-A-N-I-K, but I tried Y-A-N-I-C-K and K-C and Tony. IE and Tony Y. Like, that dude does not exist on the internet. It's weird.
It was weird, yeah, because every time I'd go back home, I'd go looking for him, you know, and I'd, you know, he'd moved around so much, he'd never stayed in the place for more than a couple months, and I ran into him one day on the street, and we went and sat down and had a cup of coffee together, and we were just like,
man,
this was probably 15 years ago or so.
Oh wow,
that was the last. It was like we picked right up where we left off, and we were doing spontaneous poetry, and he was smoking the smokes, and he was sucking down the coffee, and
he's probably dead from lung cancer, man. The way that guy smoked.
He always drank that decaf Nescafe stuff, you know.
What's the point? Coffee doesn't taste good, really. It's the caffeine.
That was rough.
What's the point? Oh, the crystals. That stuff's horrible.
Yeah, that was weird. But
it's like NA meeting coffee, man.
I'll tell you though, man, he helped me out a lot, man. He inspired me and he gave me confidence in doing my thing. Whatever. I didn't even know what my thing was, but I eventually figured it out. You helped me with that too.
Yeah. And you me, brother.
Wow. Thank you. Right back at you.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So yeah. So that was Tony. And then, do you remember
I think we should call this, let's call this episode Tony Yannick, We Salute You. Because he might actually do a search on, you know, for his name or something on the internet at some point.
I would love to reconnect with him.
You know, in the chapel, in the chapel. I don't know where he'd have a computer. Jail? I don't know. I don't know, man. I love you, Tony. But I find it weird and kind of cool that there's a human I know that is not on the internet. That mean, it's weird because I've searched like other people that they don't have any of their own presence on the internet, but there's like, you know, they sued somebody or they were sued or they went in jail and there's a public record on the internet,
right.
You know, like he's a ghost. How is that totally. Possible?
I don't know. Do you remember the
Maybe
time
he was the Unabomber?
No, man.
I'm kidding.
We looked him up one time and we found him. Remember? It was that one time you came. Yeah. So this was weird. Remember that?
When I played with Bomb in Jamestown with the Rusty Nail?
Yeah. Remember we hung out. I hung out with you guys. You were practicing in the old mill. And we were messing around. We were looking around.
Vicky Solo. Yeah. That's when my girlfriend was. After that, like, I picked that girlfriend up on the tour, Vicky Solo. And she moved to San Francisco with me and was my girlfriend for like 3 years. And then she went on tour with the Grateful Dead and like never came back. And, you know, came back at one point and was like, had done acid so many days in a row that it was like, lights on, but no one's home, man. Like Syd Barrett. Although I think she kind of got her act together and had kids and are adults now. But she was Syd Barrett's sister for a while.
Jeez. But we were searching through the old mill and we found that flag that said Anthem on it. Remember?
Yeah,
and we found out where Tony lived, but he wasn't home when we went, so we left a flag on his door. And I always felt bad about that because I thought we probably freaked him out. Because
he might have thought it was creepy. He probably thought like someone was messing with him.
Yeah,
and he probably thought it was someone from that band or something.
Yeah, I kind of regret that, but I think our intentions were good. But
yeah, I regret some things. I regret the time that I was recording with Bomb's first record at Hyde Street Studio in San Francisco, and there were like three studios in that building, and there was another band playing, and we took a break. I could hear another band like mixing upstairs with the door open and speakers really loud. I went up there and it was like, it was Blue Oyster Cult. And it was and I sat in the hall and listened for a while, and I was like, oh man, I don't know about this music. I used to like them. And Rosier, what's the guy's name with the cool beard shades, came out and he looked like he was out of his mind on coke, and I was like, hey, I'm Michael Dean, I'm recording upstairs, I used to love you guys, and this music you're making now is horrible. And I feel bad about that. But that record is the lowest selling record. I nailed it.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends. Go to freedomfiends.com to help keep it drone proof.
Cell 411 is a great free app for Android and iPhone. It allows you to set up public and private cells for dealing with crime, emergencies, setting up neighborhood watch, activism, and even protecting your kids from bullies on the street or at school. Cell 411 gives your cells turn-by-turn directions to your location with one touch on your phone. There is also a Bluetooth panic button available that can be worn on your wrist, belt, or around your neck.
Cell 411 has real-time chat for each alert so you can discuss the incident with family or friends in real-time video streaming. The video is stored on Cell 411's servers so your evidence cannot be deleted if your phone is taken or destroyed. Cell 411 has decentralized ride sharing that allows for payment in any form, crypto, barter, silver, cash, etc. Cell 411 does not take a cut of your fare. Get Cell 411 free on Google Play and the iTunes Store, or go to getcell411.com. That's getcell411.com.
Boy, that went quick. That show went quick, Phil.
What? We're done?
No, we got this is our last segment. Then we're done.
Wow. Man.
What, we're done?
Wow.
That show that we just did and are doing now went quick. So, real quick, I never finished the story about the day I realized the world was not a beautiful place. And I was 19 when I realized this, which is pretty late to realize this. But it was when I was in 17. It was when I was in Jamestown, first year there in college, and it was winter, and I was going to that music store down on like 2nd Street, maybe. Do you remember the name of it?
Right.
I don't. One music store. The one that Tony Yannick like owed a lot of money to because he kept
Chautauqua
like,
Music, that's what it was.
Yeah, because he kept borrowing drumsticks from them and
right.
He's like, I got a gig next week. I'll pay you back. And then he never could pay him. He meant to pay him back. He just never could.
Right.
But anybody deserves to win a lottery. It's him. So hope that happens. He suffered for his art and our art. And now it's your turn, people. So I was going down to the music store, but they were closed. It was like really early in the morning. I was like, oh, they don't open for 2 hours. Okay, well, and I'd trudge down there, walk down there, 10 blocks in the snow. And when I was walking by, there's a bar about a block from there, and there was blood in the snow, and there was a lot of blood in the snow. And it came from the bar, and the bar was closed, and this blood was fresh. Like there was, you know, heat, steam coming off in the snow. And there was, and it led to like, you know, a car that had driven away. Like it led from the bar like 40 feet or to the car park, you know, to the parking lot for the bar. And then like stopped where there's some fresh tracks. Like somebody shot or stabbed probably and had like staggered their car and left. I don't know what that was about, but I know that things that happen in bars after hour when the sun's coming up are usually not legal. So, not that they're bad, but stabbing people and shooting was bad. But I just kind of like, my heart sunk. I was kind of like, man, the world's not a beautiful place. Because I was walking around, like, I was probably high on something. And I was like, man, it's snowing, but it's not too cold and it's not windy. And I'm walking and it's great and the world's a beautiful place. And I was like, oh my God, I just saw over a pint of blood in a trail from a bar to a car.
God. Man. Yeah, man, I realized the world wasn't a beautiful place, too. Like, same kind of thing. I moved into this apartment on, I think it was 3rd, 4th Street, and there was a park across the street. It's called the Parkview Apartment, actually. And the following morning after I moved in, I went upstairs because I had a basement apartment, and there was blood, like, smeared all the way down the hall, right? And so somebody got stabbed in the park during the night, and all I could imagine is the guy or whoever was trying to, like, pound on people's doors to get some help, but...
like strangers,
Yeah, but, like, nobody helped the guy, man.
Yeah. I don't know if I'd open the door of somebody screaming, I'm bleeding to, you know, I'd probably call 911 or cell 411, but I don't think I'd open the door to someone who's screaming at me in the middle of the night through the door.
So,
that's a scam to get into houses, too, for home invasions.
So the last time I was back home, I went back there and I pulled over and I was taking some pictures and heard a gunshot and said, I'm done. I don't want to remember this anymore. So it's only gotten worse, my friend.
Yep. Man. Well, I want to do some redemption in the third act. One is Bola VPN. They just played an ad for them. They are not only someone that advertises with the Freedom Fiends, but someone that I use their services of and really like. And Bola VPN allows you to not have the government and your ISP looking at what you're looking at on the internet. And you might say, like I used to say 15 years ago, but I have nothing to hide. But you do have something to hide, even if you don't. First of all, most people do. You, you listening, you got something to hide. You know it. Secondly, even if you got nothing to hide, think about anything that you might be involved in that's currently legal and acceptable that could be illegal later. Owning guns, for instance, or, I don't know, any number of, you know, adult consensual things that you might do that you don't really want a record on the internet. Plus, you know, who knows, you might Google, like, stomach problems, and then your insurance goes up. Who knows? So, use Bolo VPN. It's really good reconnecting with you, Phil. Now, hey. I'm digging it, brother.
Digging it. I hope this digging is... Digging it on this end.
The re-beginning of a long and fruitful relationship.
Fruity. Sound.
Yeah.
Fruity.
It keeps the scurvy away, man.
It does. A fiend a day keeps the brain scurvy away. Yeah. Worms. I feel good. This radio thing makes you feel good after instead of scared. Worms.